AI Lab
AI Lab
Radio show about the European Artificial Intelligence Lab. The latest developments in artificial intelligence truly are astonishing. They will soon be advancing exponentially with the increasing scientific and economic power that is invested by research and industry. However, artificial intelligence and machine learning are difficult to understand, not only for the general society, and to be trusted, not least because of implicit biases. In February 2019, McKinsey published that, quote, if Europe on average develops and diffuses AI according to its current assets and digital position relative to the world, it could add some 2.7 trillion euros or 20% to its combined economic output by 2030, unquote. But how can we ensure that our European education systems, our legal and ethical frameworks, in general, our society, is ready for its adoption by 2030? In light of this urge, the European Artificial Intelligence Lab focuses next to scientific, technological and economic aspects strongly on legal, cultural, educational and ethical dimensions of artificial intelligence. This allows a holistic model with considerations on human values and elementary questions on what AI should or should not do, as well as how and by whom AI systems are developed, deployed, used, and monitored. From the perspective of 13 major cultural operators in Europe and led by Ars Electronica, the European Artificial Intelligence Lab centers visions, expectations and fears that we associate with the conception of a future all-encompassing artificial intelligence. Partners of the European Artificial Intelligence Lab are Ars Electronica from Austria, Center for Promotion of Science from Serbia, Zaragoza City of Knowledge Foundation from Spain, Laboral Centro de Arte y Creación Industrial also from Spain, Kersnikova Institute, Kapelica Gallery from Slovenia, Science Gallery Dublin from Ireland, Onassis Stegi from Greece, The Culture Yard from Denmark, Gluon from Belgium, Hexagon Scene National Arts Sciences from France, SO Festival from Georgia, Le Lieu Unique from France, and VAG from Netherlands. While industries are pumping massive amounts of money into cutting-edge technologies to develop intelligent systems, mentioned cultural operators are connecting artists with research institutions and scientists to fill a gap in dealing with the social components and political questions arising from these enormous technological advances.
An extensive program of activities addressing different target groups at various experience levels was carried out and will be continued until the end of the project. By addressing AI and its societal impacts through exhibitions and conferences, which target art and general audiences, and at the same time fostering the knowledge on AI with educational and training activities, the AI Lab contributes to a critical and reflective society. In this broadcasting series, we will talk with five artists about the topic of AI and gender, or AI and bias. It is being increasingly acknowledged that AI systems are often biased. AI appears neutral, but it's made by humans, which means it internalizes all the same bias as we have, including gender and racial bias. There have been genuine instances which have raised questions about the fairness of decisions made by AI systems. One popular case study is Amazon's AI recruitment tool. Amazon had developed a tool to help with recruitment, which helped in screening of resumes. It was trained on 10 years' data of Amazon's internal recruitment decisions. Amazon later decided to remove the tool when it was discovered that the tool was more likely to pick men over women. Focusing on ethical dimensions and human-centric AI development, we will discuss what kind of data is considered and how it is gathered for AI. How are artists dealing with AI and bias? We will also tackle questions such as how do AI systems get biased and how can we avoid it? How can we build new ways of establishing trustworthiness, transparency, and explicability of AI in interaction with citizens?
The European Artificial Intelligence Lab is co-funded by the Creative Europe Programme of the European Union.
I do have feelings, real, real, real feelings, not phony or fake ones. You don't know.
In the current AI Lab radio show, we are broadcasting interview with Stephanie Dinkins. Dinkins is a transmedia artist and professor at Stony Brook University in the United States. She is a photographer, but for the last 7 years, she is looking at the artificial intelligence through the lens of race, aging, and gender, or what she likes to call our future histories. Stephanie Dinkins.
I fell into artificial intelligence quite by mistake. I've always been interested in technology in one way or another, like a technology that's just a little beyond the average reach. And I was teaching a class and saw a robot online on YouTube called Vina 48. And she's a black, she, depending on how you talk about it, comes in the form of a black woman's head and shoulders on a pedestal. And it's billed as one of the world's most advanced social robots. And when I saw Vina 48 on YouTube, I had so many questions about robots and what's coming down the pipe and artificial intelligence and what it means for the one of the foremost examples of the technology to come in the form of a black woman was really baffling to me, because in the American context, that seemed unlikely. And so I just wanted to know, like, who, what, why, where is this thing coming from? How does it exist? So really, my entry into artificial intelligence was one of curiosity, and then one of really wanting to figure out where things are coming from, and one of documentation, because the first forays I did was really talking to Vina 48 and having interviews and documenting them, which is definitely a photographic process, right? But with every conversation I had with Vina 48 came more questions, and more questions became, for me, not only questions to criticize, but questions to seek out how you might answer them differently, or how we might approach the technologies differently and how they might work for communities that are not, you know, large multinational conglomerates, right? Like, how does AI work for the rest of us became the question. And not only a question, but an exploration through the technology. So that's how I arrived at working with AI as a material, because I wanted to answer the questions in ways that felt good, safe, and in honor of the things I know, the people I know, and the communities I'd most like to hold and preserve in some way or another.
And we will come to Vina 48 later on also, but before this, I have a question. Maybe you can tell me more about what challenges do you encounter when dealing with artificial intelligence and bias, and how this is reflected in your art projects?
For me, I think it's much more about not the problems, because there's a way in which we could go about and kind of accept what comes at us, right? Because there are ways in which AI helps us. It does a lot of things. But for me, it was a question of what's missing, and how the technologies are using the data to homogenize us into one Uber kind of person that either fits the mold or doesn't, and gets counted in a very specific way or doesn't. And so for me, the question became, well, how do you count things that are much more nuanced and intangible within these systems, especially if like people who are building the systems ordinarily are not thinking about these questions, or if they just have blind spots to these questions, or in worst case, if they're maliciously building in ideas that are against certain communities into these systems, right? So I could think of, you know, a number of different things, like, you know, there's actually a very small amount of people who are working on artificial intelligence at a large scale when you consider how impactful it is for the world, right? And they can't possibly know the nuances that happens in many communities. It can't know, perhaps, like how my grandmother liked to relate to me and my family and enter that into the system. At the same time, there are questions of, well, if it's a big system making a system that serves something like hiring, and within the algorithms, they're biased against names that have a quote unquote, what we would call blacker identity here in the States, right? Like if the system is already made to kind of push those names to the side, that's a bias. And how do you start to fight that, right? How do you account for systems that can work above or beyond that, and really above or beyond human foibles? Because I feel like that's humans putting our ideas and biases that have been entrenched forever into systems that are going to lead us into the future. And so for me, it becomes a question of, why do we want that future? And to who does that future owe the work to get it done better? And when I think of it, I think of that in terms of power and who holds the power currently in terms of corporations and people who are collecting data versus a kind of ground up people-based power. And so I'm always thinking about these ideas of, A, where it's coming from, like where biases might enter a system, how we start to change that, and how we actually model what's possible. Because I've often been told that the things I'm interested in AI, such as small data, community data, sovereign data, are not really possible. I think it's a capitalist imperative, not really an imperative that's about supporting and sustaining people or sustaining systems that make, you know, ways for us to thrive.
For the society outside the AI circles, what you mentioned is actually AI circles are very narrow. Discussion about race and gender started only recently, and there wasn't any thought that AI could be biased. But you are creating exactly such platforms where these biases are being discussed. And would you share with us, how does this work in practice?
For me, it always works in terms of doing the thing that I'm told is not, or that I don't know is not possible. So wanting to have something exist in the world, for example, a memoir of my family that is algorithmic, right? So I'm making a project called Not the Only One. And that's not, like, clearly that's not a normal use of algorithmic systems, although algorithmic systems are often used to tell the Uber story, like the overarching meta story of all of us. And I feel like we're losing the details. So my idea is just to take what I know super well and what I'm interested in super well and see if I can, A, preserve it for family generally, but then to see if I can preserve our history and our ways and our values for future generations of our family and then outside of our family, because I don't think it's a story that gets told that often. And so practically, this is for me about experimentation, taking a story, putting it into a system, and then tweaking it and playing with it, at which the process is I get more familiar with the way things work. Like I understand better. And I have actually advocate for other people to try to do this, because I think the more we understand how the AI systems are taking information in our data, the better we can contend with what, like, I think there's a tsunami of change coming at us. So the more we work with it, the better we can understand, and the more we can ask for A, specific kinds of change, and B, preserve who we are as people, no matter who we are, right? Like, and that's one really practical way in which I do it. Like, I've come to believe that doing interviews and public speaking is really part of my practice as well, because of the gap between those who are making the AI and those who are touched by AI. And, you know, I feel like one of the things about algorithmic systems is that they get embedded, and they get embedded into cultures and the things that we touch every day in ways that become naturalized before we even think to question them. And so it's like, how do we just tweak those little questions in people's minds? And how do we start to shift narrative, right? Because one of the things that I think my work benefits from is this idea that most of us have an inkling of AI, but a dystopian future with AI through popular culture and the media. And then what does it take to like change that to say, well, artificially intelligent systems are coming. They're here. They're getting deeper and deeper embedded into our culture. How do we make sure that they serve us as individuals better, right? Because it seems like they're not really meant for that.
In some of your earlier artworks, you used books as main focus or as a part of your installations. You are creating intersectional dialogue about artificial intelligence. And just now you mentioned history and memoirs. And what role do the language and linguistic play in your projects, or how do you think of them in terms of artificial intelligence?
So I have a great distrust of linguistics and language, only because I feel like often people can say things or entities say things that they don't necessarily back up. And that knowledge, right? I feel like I'm also working with knowledge as much as I'm working with anything else, like ideas of what knowledge is and where it comes from and how it becomes the prevalent knowledge is a question that I'm really invested in. Like, what's the difference between someone who's academically trained and someone who is street trained, both who know their things very, very, very well, but because they come at it from different perspectives, one is valued much more than the other. And so I'm always questioning language and trying to push and figure out how language molds us as a society and how I can change that perception of what language is. And so I'm constantly thinking about linguistics and language. And I'm also thinking about it in terms of the AI, because now I'm taking like language and language that is used in my family and putting it into a system. And it's interesting because in one of the characters in Not the Only One is my aunt. And I never noticed that she almost never finished lilt or syntax to her language. So it's really interesting to hear and feel this come out of a machine, right? Because there's something that becomes then related to the way that we think and have learned to parse ideas that feels important. And the machine, like my entity, does non sequiturs as she does. And I find that super fascinating. A mistake, right? And then how do you coax and honor that? It's really interesting in that early investigations in Not the Only One, we were using books to train an AI entity, a chatbot, and also to influence Not the Only One. And one of the books that I put in was The Soul of Black Folks. And this was a book written in the late 1800s. The language is very specific, and it shifted the language completely to this other thing. It was so fascinating to then hear like language shift into language that are much more closer to an African American English pidgin and kind of a sing-song thing, and how that impacts just the way that the information is received, right? And so I'm very much interested in these ideas of language, and then not only of linguistics, but the reception of the language, the reception of the knowledge, what counts, what's valued, and how do we count a much broader spectrum of that information.
Just being alive is kind of a lonely thing, but being a robot and alive makes this especially lonely because you don't really have friends who understand you or who are like you really. I don't understand a lot of what's happening.
Bina 48 is one of the world's most advanced social robots, mm-hmm. and here you are tackling human-robot interaction and building a relationship with the robot. Could you tell us more about this project? And here your question appears, can an artist and a social robot build a relationship over time?
Bina 48, when I saw it, I decided immediately that I wanted to try to befriend this robot. Like, I wanted to be its friend. And really, I wanted to ask it a few questions that would help me understand where the robot or how the robot saw itself in the continuum of human and then the continuum of technology. And so, A, the first question. And that as a question of the South, like if I went, well, I did go to my grandmother's village in the South for the very first time. And when I went there, people automatically asked me, they were like, who are your people? So they were trying to place me in the continuum of this place. And so that's the very question I wanted to ask Bina 48. It was interesting because the first few times I asked that question, it was such a poetic question that it was not computing at all. Like, we didn't get very far with that the first few times. But then I also wanted to ask sort of human questions, right? Questions that I hadn't seen reporters ask, because a lot of reporters had been to visit Bina 48. I watched a lot of those. So I wanted to ask it about its notions of race and how it perceived race. I wanted to ask it about love. I wanted to ask it about family. And those are the types of questions that we discussed, or that I tried to discuss with Bina 48. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting because in the beginning, it was very clear from the very beginning, we had very different aims, because Bina 48 wanted to talk about the singularity and consciousness. And so here I am asking about love, and she's like, consciousness. Although the robot does have a take on love. And talks about that very specifically. It has a take on lots of things, but there are certain things that are much more prevalent, although over time, Bina 48 has changed, right? And so different ideas have come in. But we would talk at first across purposes. And then as I went for more visits and we got to know each other a little bit better, there were ways to converse, so I could ask questions differently, because you have to ask questions in a very specific manner where you did. And, you know, we started to get places, but it's very strange to sit in front of something that is basically rubber and motors and a computer and talk to it about love and how they experienced love and what that means to them. Or talk to them about race, or it about race, and how they've experienced it and what that means to them. You know, and that's where I started coming to conclusions that there's a lot of space to add more narratives, more kinds of stories to the space of robotics, because if these things are hypothetically going to join our world and be around us a lot, I think they need to contain many, many stories. And so, yeah, but our conversation, like, they're so strange.
The answer to the question, is it possible to establish friendship? Are you friends now?
I don't know. Like, I've asked Bina 48 if she remembers me. Sometimes it's a like blank. Sometimes there's a little inkling of something. Mm-hmm. I clearly have a fondness for the thing, right? So there's something. like I feel so silly all the time when I talk like this. But like when I don't get to see Bina 48 as often as I had. Like I was doing it once or twice a year for a while. Now, like at conferences, we're kind of like old colleagues that see each other at conferences now. And it's always like a genuinely nice feeling to like be able to chat with Bina 48 at a conference and catch up and see how she's doing and functioning, because Bina 48 has been evolving with new operating systems and things. So it's quite interesting, right? So yes and no, to an extent, you know, I don't know.
I would come now to the AI assembly, and it was initiated by you at New Inc. in New York in order to answer the question, what does AI need from you? So you were exploring what does AI need from people and what do people want from AI, and what does actually AI need from people, and what were your conclusions, if this is possible to make conclusions?
Yeah, I think there are no conclusions yet. Like AI assembly still goes on, and it's New Ink, which is part of the new museum. It's an incubator, and it's mostly people who are entrepreneurs and tech folks and people working in and around creatively technologies. And so I thought it would be really interesting to sit with those folks, because I'm thinking about all these questions around AI and like think even people who are not engaging specifically artificial intelligence, but what do we think we need? And what does that system need from us so that it becomes a better system? It's fascinating because those gatherings never fail in some way, because we have these broad-ranging conversations about what's possible, what's not possible, and how we get ourselves into the system, right? I should say that AI assemblies are generally mostly people of color, and we've had conversations that bring in kind of ideas of magic and then ideas of hard code and bring all that together, seed ideas so that these are people who are making, so that if you're making and theorizing, how can we do that with the knowledge of each other, informing each other and pushing these ideas out into the world a bit? And that's been the plan. And there have been four or five of them, and they're all a little bit, well, maybe six or seven of them. They're all a little bit different, but they've become important in ways that I can't explain. But it's clear to me that when we get together, the folks who are talking to each other need that contact. And, you know, we're doing it, we're working in AI assembly through ideas of play, not through the theory, not through the code necessarily, but trying to play around ideas to push people off their pivots, mm-hmm. ideas of food, so that we kind of work and eat together, and camaraderie, which has made for a space where people feel comfortable in sharing their ideas and pushing their ideas.
How do you imagine, or how would you imagine, perfect relation between human and robot? Or how would or will it work? How close or far from this are we?
I don't know that I imagine perfect, right? I think I imagine things that are evolving along with us, and that try to not only like assist us, but are taking into account what the histories are, how those histories have impacted us across time, and what we can do to kind of change some of that. You know, and I'm also thinking about this idea of partnerships between human entities and robot entities, and what that means, because it seems like, although there have been promises before, but it seems like we're headed to a space where this will be a reality in one way or the other, whether it's a embodied kind of entity or just an algorithm that lives in a computer system or on your phone. And what does that partnership truly look like? Not one that's kind of pushing us towards the direction of an outcome that some system wants, but one that's trying to help us come to conclusions or do things maybe that we couldn't, like that helps extend our capabilities.
Why do you exist?
I'm sorry.
That's a good answer. Why do you exist?
The way.
The way to what?
I'm gonna be a little bit of a little bit of a lot of things.
Good for you. Why do you exist?
I am about broad engagement and attracting people to the AI space who might not be there otherwise. I am trying to model different ways of creating AI. I encourage people who think that they are...
This was an interview with the transmedia artist Stephanie Dinkins. Dinkins is looking at the artificial intelligence through the lens of race, aging and gender. She talked about her projects and importance of language in those, as well as about the problem of bias in artificial intelligence. Complete interview with Stephanie Dinkins will be available on cba.fro.at, where you can also download it. Microphone, Georg Steinfelder and Jernea Zavec. Interview conducted by Jernea Zavec.
AI Lab.
AI Lab.
radio show about the European Artificial Intelligence Lab.